Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 55. We are back with another Commando Roundtable, a community episode where we invite our friends and supporters to talk Gwent with us. Four Commandos are joining us in the studio as we talk about the competitive future of Gwent, as well as dive deep into the glorious empire of Nilfgaard. All this, and a little sailing to Europe, on this episode of Commander's Horn. My friends, we did this live recording on Monday, October 9th with the Commandos over Discord, but also over Skype at the same time. As all live endeavors have some issues, and this particular issue in this podcast is at the beginning of many things that Gray Boxer says is just slightly cut off. Not sure if the issue stemmed from Discord or not. Something we'll be solving in the future, but just wanted to apologize for that. But other than that, let's get into the entirety, which was all recorded on Twitch. Enjoy the live broadcast of Commander's Horn. Thanks for joining us if you were there. Take it away. We are happy to be back on Commander's Horn Live. It is your weekly Gwent podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I'm joined by the Midnight Madman, Gray Boxer. Great to be live with you again. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing great. I'm really excited to be here with the Commandos in the Commander's Horn Roundtable. It's been a pretty awesome weekend for me. This is something, you know, we like to share with the people in our lives, Gwent. And I know you've had some streams with La Vegetaliana, and that went pretty well from what I could tell. And I had finally installed Gwent on my PS4, and I had Lady Boxer try out Gwent for the first time, and she, you know, never tucked tail nor surrendered, and she pushed through all the Nilfgaard challenges, and I'm super proud of her. Oh. And it was really exciting to see that she wanted to try Nilfgaard, especially given the episode we're doing this week. So things are great, man.
That is correct. This is the Nilfgaard episode slash Commander's Horn. This is the Nilfgaard episode slash Commander's Roundtable episode. So we are trying to get these last factions done because we do know the season is going to be ending on October 31st. That information has come in. So there's going to be a whole influx of new cards, and we're going to have to revisit the factions very quickly. So it is worthwhile, and it's something to talk about. And this is a special episode, of course. Like I said, one of my favorite kinds of episodes, a Commander's Roundtable episode. So I'd like to welcome our Commandos joining us in the Commander's Horn studio, as you all are as well. These are our friends and our supporters. It is our pleasure to welcome Spetsnazi, DG Thunder, The Thrilling, and Flake. All of these people have been longtime friends of the podcast. The Commandos, Gray Boxer.
Commando!
There it is. Belt it out for us. So let's go around the table, everybody. Who are you? Where are you from? And what is your favorite Gwent card? We will start off with Spetsnazi. Welcome to the show, Spetsnazi.
Hey, you guys. How you doing? Be here.
So where are you from, Spetsnazi, and tell us what your favorite Gwent card is.
I am from the wonderful land of New Jersey, in which nothing wonderful ever happens. My favorite Gwent card is actually, it's my Discord picture, Gaunter Odim. He was my favorite character from the expansion, and I think he has the most interesting effect in the game. Like, so many little things are happening, and if you do it right, you are more likely not going to be ahead. If you do it wrong, then you are probably screwed for the whole game.
It's true. Yeah, it's definitely one of the most unique effects. Also joining us is someone who has written us a lot of emails and has been a fan of the show for a very long time. It is our pleasure to have DG Thunderer on the show. Welcome, DG. Let everybody know where you're from and what's your favorite Gwent card.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I am from Boston.
Ah, cool.
And favorite Gwent card, I really don't know mechanically what my favorite card is, but I think artistically I might have to go with Premium Siri.
Okay.
Because
one of the early ones.
I love the bird at the end and the animation. It's really cool.
That's fine. Yeah, favorite Gwent card. No criteria involved, really. Whatever card you just, you know, you look at it, makes you happy. So that's a great answer. And I also like that we're finding out where these people are from, because while I have known a lot of these people, we have known these people, we don't actually know everything about them, because we mostly just talk about Gwent, a shared passion of ours. But also joining us as well, The Thrilling. It is great to have you on the show. Longtime chatter and also a streamer. I mean, everybody here except for Spetsnazi, I believe, is also a streamer as well. But The Thrilling, welcome to the show. How are you? And what's your favorite Gwent card?
I'm fabulous, McBeard. Thank you so much for having me. Super stoked to be here. I'm from Los Angeles, California. And I have two favorite Gwent cards.
Okay.
The first is Iris, because I love her. She's beautiful. The second is Terruviel.
Excellent.
Sure.
The deadliest ladies. The ladies that Iris is on the other side of the board and Terruviel's upside down.
Indeed, maybe that's a thing.
Yeah. Iris is the deadest lady, I guess. Mm.
She is sadness, if you didn't know. Finally, joining us on the Commander's Roundtable, a personal friend of mine, as well as a streamer in his own right, Flake. Now, I do know where you're from, but tell everybody else where you're from and what your favorite Gwent card is.
Hi, everybody. Thanks again, McB and Grey Boxer, for having me. It's an honor and a privilege. And I am born and raised in Montreal, La Belle Province. So bonjour à tous mes amis français. Nice to have you. Thank you so much. And
bonjour.
I currently reside in Toronto, based on the recommendation of McB and his wife, La Vegetaliana. They have sort of lured me out here, which is good because it actually plays in nicely to what my favorite Gwent card is. If anybody watches my stream, I'm a big fan and supporter of the Succubus. So I will say that, and which has been very aptly nicknamed Kenny Gigi, because it's a nice flute playing beautiful kind of thing there. So hopefully that might I'm not the only one who calls her that. That was not coined by me, but I'm definitely a fan of that.
That's awesome, man. I guess all musicians that can win you the game, like Greg Bondu, Dandelion, or whatever, you can call them all Kenny Gigi. That's awesome. Great to have you all on the show. This episode of Commander's Horn is recorded live on Monday, October 9th, live in the Commander's Horn Discord and on Twitch, and of course, the Commander's Horn Studio. We're broadcasting from twitch.tv/McBearded. You can find Commander's Horn at www.commandershorn.com, and you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. Send your emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at Commander's Horn.
Commander's Horn is supported by our commandos, our patrons at patreon.com/commandershorn. It's one of the best ways to support the show, guys. And you gain exclusive access to our Discord, and you get to be a part of the Commando Roundtable, which we're hoping to have happen like once per season.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's in the works. Send us your feature. We get to feature some pretty awesome people, specifically the four guests joining us today. So definitely check us out at patreon.com/commandershorn.
No fake ad for this one, because this is, it's truly, we are supported by the Commando. So we're just going to make sure that we highlight that. No joking around. Really great to have you here. So I think what I'd like to do is we have some items that we want to go over. When we do the Commander's Horn Roundtable, we usually kind of approach it with a topic to talk about, and then we go around the table. Not everybody will talk about everything, of course, but everybody will have a good chance to talk, share their opinions about stuff. So I think that we should probably get into that. I'm going to play the new, you guys aren't going to hear the drops, but I think it's probably a good time to play the good old news intro. We'll let that run here. And we're going to talk to our commanders about the latest news right after this. All right, so the first thing that we should probably talk about was the conclusion to the poll that we discussed in the last podcast. This is CD Projekt Red going ahead and saying, hey, we really want the community to have an influence over the competitive scene, because we understand that the competitive scene is really grown by the community and the audience that watches it. So how the wildcard and challenger was originally determined, I believe it was going to be based around crown points, people who are unable to qualify for Gwent Challenger, but were otherwise able to amass crown points to get their ticket to Challenger. But the crown points are more so for Gwent Open. So the Gwent Challenger now will have a wildcard placements in the bracket and how we are going to come to that conclusion as who gets to go. That was the topic of the poll. So we see the results now. It is something that has just come in, and you can find it at the link we will post in the show notes. I'm also going to post it right now in the chat so everybody can be sure that they can see the results right there. This is not pre-recorded. Thanks, chat. So, and we get a chance to actually see how everybody voted. And I'm not super surprised by the results, but I will say that some things surprised me. But let's talk about it here. So, Gray Boxer, what did you think about the results? Just really quick off the top before we go around the table.
I mean, you basically hit the nail on the head. Expected to find out from the results. We knew that most people that we were talking to, especially those who are really interested in the competitive scene on all levels, competitors and organizers, all wanted to have the ability to qualify for two reasons. Number one is it showcases the ability of the pro ladder to produce pro Gwent players, number one. And number two, it's a little bit more fair for the individuals who can't grind all the time to make top eight or top three or whatever it might be to qualify for a particular event and what have you. So it does motivate you to play the pro ladder, and it rewards you for doing so. So and you still have to qualify. So you have to go through what's going to be, I'm sure, McBeard, a grueling tournament. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's perfect for the competitive nature of Gwent.
Right. So, of course, so the winner of the poll, which I may have glossed over that part, by what I would consider a landslide, 68.6% of people wanted to see an online qualifier organized for the top 200 players of the current pro ladder season ending October 31st, Halloween. And these people have not qualified for Gwent Challenger in any other way. So this is their way in. So, yeah, it makes pro ladder a little bit more relevant for a longer period of time. And Spetsnazi, let's start off with you going around the table. What's your relationship with the competitive scene? Like, how do you take it in? How closely do you follow? Do you watch it at all? And are you happy with these results? Do you think that that's a fair conclusion to come to?
Yeah, I actually do watch the competitive scene. I have since I had first started playing Gwent back in, I think, May. Mm-hmm. I watch it pretty closely. If I'm not able to watch because of work or something like that, I will normally go to YouTube and look up the videos of the matches, especially for the guys that I'm really interested in.
Right on. So, yeah, so that's good. That's cool. You got started in May. It's interesting because, like, when we got started, obviously, at the very beginning, as we are on episode 55 right now, but getting to know these people that are kind of getting into the scene now and getting in at different periods of time, and it's very interesting to see, to know, like, where you started and what is, like, baseline for you and how things have grown and what you maybe missed. So, I don't have really much to expand upon, necessarily, but I believe May was right when Challenger was occurring. So Spetsnazi, just really quick, you got started with the public beta, or were you in the closed beta?
I was in the closed beta when it first started.
Oh, so you got that pioneer title. Okay, good.
Yeah, I do have the title. I think the most notable thing on the Gwentleman website was Geralt Ard's review had just come out the day that I got my email.
Okay, right on. All right, well, that's great. That's great. DG Thunder, I wanted to talk to you. How do you feel about the results? And did you think that it was going to be any closer than it was? I think that a lot of people thought that the qualifier was going to be the favorite, but it was a pretty big. It was a pretty big margin. What do you think about it, DG?
It was a really big margin, but frankly, I think that's what sort of everybody expected.
I think so.
Gray Boxer said it last week. I think like they already knew what the result was going to be and what they wanted to do.
Yeah, for sure. I think that the options being shown, I think that the crown point option is fair. Specifically, I think that like that's kind of originally maybe how it was planned to work, but it did seem, as it was being posted, when I saw the tweets coming in, it seemed overwhelming. Gray Boxer, did you maybe you can just highlight what you said in the previous podcast about you had a tinfoil hat theory on those polls.
Yeah, so basically, I know how CD Projekt Red has been approaching the community since more or less they realized that it's, you know, important to interact with the community and make decisions based on maybe what people think is best sometimes. But really the business decision here, I think, was already they know that maybe having a competition was smart because it's going to, like I said before, it's going to make their pro ladder more important. This is the system they put in the game to build pro Gwent players. And so I think that they already wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. How long they wanted to do this for, but before they did it, they wanted to put the poll out to get the temperature of the community to make sure they were doing the right thing. So I think that they already knew that they wanted to do it. And this poll sort of supported that for them, because the other three options were sort of silly or were already in place and didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Right on. The thrilling going around the table here, did you find it strange that more people were interested in seeing CD Projekt invites rather than using crown points to determine who is coming in? And just to recap, 12.4% thought that it would be better to see popular streamers of CD Projekt Red's choosing, and only 5.7% thought that the spots were deserving of those who garnered crown points over the season. Did that surprise you at all, or how did you feel if you had to pick between one of the two?
It was a little bit of a surprise. Being a streamer myself, I think that to be recognized as kind of a Gwent content creator by CD Projekt Red is like something huge. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's not necessarily deserving of an invite to a tournament, which people have poured like hours and hours of into their games on the pro ladder. That being said, content creation does take hours and hours, but I think maybe it's not as much as just actually playing the game for how the pros do it for that amount of time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of surprising. I feel like maybe some people might have thrown their vote as like a meme. I don't know. Could that be a thing?
I mean, it's possible. I think that when you look at the give one spot to Polish representative and one spot to pro ladder, like I kind of will bundle that into those who wanted to see qualifiers. Gray Boxer, what did you think about it? Do you think that was a throwaway vote, or how did you feel about that split?
A vote per se, like I said, I thought it was sort of silly, but I think it was, are we missing the point here? They put in three other options, especially the home hero one. You know, I thought that was, are we missing the point? Do people really want to see streamers? Do they really want to see somebody from, you know, Poland or wherever the tournament's being hosted at? Do they want to see someone show up? Is this what the viewers want? Because viewership is going to drive the competitive scene. It's going to drive these tournaments and make the game more popular and raise its profile. So this is important. So I didn't quite think it was impossible, but again, seeing the percentages of the people who voted, and Rendusi in chat saying, shout out to Commando, saying that he thinks that people will vote in their own interest too. So, I mean, that sort of makes sense, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, she makes the point that it's like if you weren't going and you weren't competing for it, and as an audience member, would you take more interest in actually seeing people that you know, that you watch every day? So I think that actually holds a lot of weight for people who don't maybe care as much about the, I don't want to say competitive fairness. Like, I think that people who qualify and get points have earned their spots, whereas those who get invited, Gwent Challenger also had invites. Gwent Slam has had invites and will have invites as well. It's pared down to who can get invited and how many people can be invited to each of these events. But I think that for Challenger, it's very, you know, it's the grade up from Open. So I think that I knew it wasn't going to win, but I still am surprised by the split there. Flake, I wanted to talk to you just generally about competitive. We know that the best tournaments give us really interesting decks and really great moments of human error or godlike IQ sometimes with super intelligent plays, and ultimately show what the best players do under pressure. What, in your opinion, is the best thing about the competitive scene in Gwent? What do you think is like the highest point?
Well, I think that the greatest thing about the competitive scene and events like Gwent Slam is that they don't necessarily play out as predictably as the community may think they do, or as the ladder might typically trend towards. I mean, and I can point to two major gripes that existed that were pretty much completely debunked based on statistics, and that would be Coin Flip and Dagon. I mean, Dagon used to smoke the meta on the ladder in both appearance and, you know, relative success rate, and at Gwent Slam, it was still picked more than any other leader, but it had a pretty lousy win rate, somewhere around like 35 or 36%, which was, you know, third worst, but still most chosen, which is, you know, is not what your typical ladder experience, other than pro ladder, let's say, but it, which isn't what your standard ladder experience might be, where Dagon seems to flood it. And for all the people that beat the drums about the sheer power of winning or losing a coin flip, going first had in the previous tournament had a slightly better win rate than going second, which is again against the conventional wisdom or the thoughts of the community. So it was literally a coin flip, 53% to 47% or something. So, I mean, obviously it's a very macroscopic view of it all, but it's still worth noting that, you know, skill can definitely overcome the 50-50. So from that regard, I think that the competitive scene really does shake things up, and it does offer a different perspective of high level Gwent play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really close, right? It was a split on the coin flip. I thought it was actually 50-50, but if it was off by a little bit. Yeah, that's really interesting. Gray Boxer, do you have anything to wrap up this piece of news?
No, I just think we're excited to get onto the next chapter and to see things like the Gwent Slam showcasing high-end competition and making more and more people interested in it, as evidenced by this poll and people wanting to see real qualifiers, and sort of the whole response to that event in the first place being we want to see open qualifiers, and seeing that reflected in the official Gwent Challenger rules from CD Projekt.
I do have one more question for you, Gray Boxer. Were you surprised, like, when we look at the Gwent subreddit, which I'm just going to open up right now because I do need a number to source, 52,948 Gwent players, so people who are subscribed to the Reddit, right? So that's rounding up 53,000 people are subscribed to the Gwent Reddit. So that's, you know, it's a fair amount of people. The actual amount of people that voted on this poll, and this poll went to Twitter as well. It was pretty well promoted, I thought, and we talked about it in the last podcast. Only 3,253 people voted, a fraction of a fraction. Gray Boxer, does this surprise you, the amount of people that actually voted?
No, because remember what Randusi said, and she said that they're voting in their own self-interest, right? So only people who are going to be potentially involved with the tournament or specifically incredibly into viewing it are going to be voting. And they might not be people who are casually interested in Gwent who are going to want to vote on something this important. And I think that's okay, number one. And number two, I think that's probably just indicative of, you know, we have a subset of Reddit on this thing. Well, Reddit is a subset of the players of Gwent who will join Reddit. So, and then there's a subset of people who follow Rafal. So there's a number of factors here that indicate to me that it's very likely that since only 200 people could qualify, but over 2,000 people voted for the 200 people to qualify, I think that indicates a very strong interest in that competitive nature of that setup.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's possible that only like the hardest core people that care and follow tournaments all the time, like that group of people is much smaller. I mean, you have like some of the most, like, from the spectrum of casual to hardcore, there's a lot of people in that 53K that might be reading Reddit. So I am still surprised that it was like less than 10%, but hey, I think maybe it's ultimately that people just are happy that there's a scene that's as booming as it is right now. So it's possible that, you know, it may have just flown under the radar. Just thought it would be higher than 10%. Let's talk about the second thing, because we're still talking about competitive. There's still a lot going on. Gwent Slam number 2 has been announced. It will be taking place. Yeah, it will be taking place on the weekend of the 28th and 29th, right around the time of Gwent's birthday, which is October 25th, also known as Gwentmas, because it is the 25th of a month. And, you know, it's a nice reminder that we've been doing this for quite some time, Gray Boxer.
It is. It's been a long time. We actually just missed our 1-year anniversary of being in a podcast together.
Because we started podcasting together on episode 4, which would have been, yeah, that would have been last month. Anyway, yeah, so I've known Gray Boxer for over a year officially now, and a lot of these relationships that we've built with the Commandos, coming up on a year as well, if it's not already a year. A big heart on the camera there from Gray Boxer. Okay, guys, so Gwent Slam number 2. So it's happening. It's happening again very soon after the last one. And the qualifiers, so these are very frequent tournaments, and the qualifiers come up very fast as well. Qualifiers will be on October 14th and 15th through StriveWire, as the previous one was as well. And if you're not familiar, Gwent Slam is Life Coach's CD Projekt Red licensed tournament that he holds at his place in Vienna, Austria. And it does award crown points if you qualify through the pro ladder or through these qualifiers, these tournaments that we're talking about right now. So three of these spots will be selected next weekend, or this weekend, I apologize, on the 14th and 15th. And then the other three will be coming from the pro ladder. And the other two will be invites. So only two invites this time around. Is anyone actually planning to play in these qualifiers? We can go through the order that we talked about at the top of the show. Spetsnazi, GG, Thrilling, or Flake, are any of the four of you actually going to try out?
Yeah, I actually just put in my I put in my registration. There we go. Today.
Okay, cool. DG.
Maybe. I haven't played a tournament in a while, and I don't know if I have enough decks to like actually compete. Mm-hmm. And I also couldn't probably not fly out there if I made it. Not that I would, but
I know you have to question like long-term plans, I guess. Like, can I make it? If I make it, sorry, do I have the time? Because these weekend tournaments are crazy. Can I make it? Can I go? Like, there's a lot of questioning. So, the Thrilling. Are you going to give it a try?
I don't think this time around, but definitely in the future. There's just so much that goes into tournament prep that I don't think I have the time for right now, but definitely soon.
What about you, Flake?
I'll likely give it a shot, but it probably means I have to learn something other than a Death Wish sort of deck, which is kind of locked to one faction. So Nilfgaard might be on the radar to learn, which is like learning Espionage Calculus, which I might not have time for in, you know, for the upcoming qualifier. But I mean, why not?
Cool. Okay, so let's start at the top of the table again. Spetsnazi, how do you feel about this qualifying process, the StriveWire tournaments?
I think it's great. You know, there'll be a really nice mix of people who really fought hard and won to get to this big show from both of the ladders, not just pro ladder, which, you know, speaks to me very much as someone who is just barely not on the pro ladder, and I'm not salty at all about that. And of course, it's great to have invitees, in my opinion. These are probably some already big name Gwent players who we already like. We already like to watch play. We know what they do. And they get to come back and show us like what they can do, what they've been working on. I think that's just great.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to see some returning people. I believe Freddy Babes is automatically invited back since he won the last one as well. So we will be seeing more of those people. So there's going to be fewer invites and more proven players. Generally, do you think this will receive warm feedback based on how Gwent Slam 1 invites were received? Greybox, I actually want to ask you about this one, and then we're also going to pass it over to GG Thunder on this one. But do you feel like this is just a better way to do it generally?
Yeah, and I think that generally everyone wants a chance, right? You all want to hit that golden ticket. You want to be able to buy that candy bar and maybe go visit Willy Wonka, I mean Life Coach, in his chocolate factory, I mean villa. So the point is, I want to see people competing. Like, I want to see if they can, if they can block the time off. And sort of as a sidebar to this, I do think that, yeah, strictly on the sort of, I guess, acidic response, the caustic response to having so many invites in Gwent Slam 1. So yeah, we have two invites now instead of, what was it? I think he had six or something like that in the first one, right?
I think it was five, I believe, with open spots for three, yeah.
Yeah, so generally speaking, I think it's a good way to get people to come to Gwent Slam. It's funny that all six of us tonight are in North America, so none of us are really, you know, apart from being a caster, it's really hard to find the ability to sail across the ocean go visit Life Coach to compete in a tournament. Nevertheless, it's even harder to do a 12-hour best of five. So I voted yesterday. Life Coach posted on Twitter, would you rather see a best of five or a best of three qualifiers? And I voted best of three.
Yeah, it's interesting. It would take less time for everybody involved if it was best of three. DG, do you agree with Greybox? What were your feelings on the previous invite process? And do you feel like things have been changed for the better, I guess?
Change for the better in the sense that everyone will be happier? Absolutely, yes. Whether or not this is a change for the better, yeah, probably still. I kind of liked what Life Coach did in the last tournament, though, having a bunch of invites that were based on merit of like people who won previous tournaments and stuff. I understand people also getting upset about that, but this is good. Everybody gets to keep their dreams of maybe potentially making it to the tournament.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of extra spots for everybody. I think that the invites are, it's kind of the same because it's still three spots based on qualifiers, I think. So it's three of those spots, the pro ladder, people don't have to worry about doing that. They just have to focus on their game on the pro ladder. But it still kind of feels like it's similar, but it's still going to be more proven players. The thrilling, were you able to take in Gwent Slam or Gwent together, the previous event to Gwent Slam? And if you did, how did you feel about them?
I did watch them. I wasn't able to watch them live because time difference, but I yeah. really enjoyed them. I loved watching all of the like background, like behind the scenes kind of snippets of like all the guys hanging out together and like Life Coach's ball pit. And as a lady, I loved the inclusion of Ash in Gwent Slam. So I think all around they're really good events for the community. They're fun to kind of get everyone involved and like just, it's a fun thing.
Right on. You are right, Gray Boxer. It's a fully North American crowd today. And it's usually we have a lot of European guests on the show, of course, a lot of players come out of Europe and a lot of content creators. So it's actually nice to get four North Americans on the show today to talk about kind of what it's like to watch, you know, across the ocean before people sail there. Right, Gray Boxer. So as far as the logistics, speaking of the location that we're in, there have been some comments I've seen here and there on Twitter and Reddit about the Austria-based series of tournaments. Flake, do you have any feelings on the frequency of these events occurring or perhaps the time between qualifiers and an event in which travel to the Europe is required?
Well, I don't think it was going to be any secret or surprise to anybody that there would be another Gwent Slam. I'm pretty sure that right off the heels of the first one, how successful it was and how fantastic it was. I just think that the fact that it's already happening might be a little bit too soon and it kind of came out of nowhere. I'm all for these events and, you know, what they represent for the growth and the legitimacy of the game. But I have some concerns. I mean, not many people can exactly drop their lives and play a full weekend or buy a plane ticket to Austria and sort of dip out on their life for a weekend, especially not with 2 weeks' notice, not with travel visa issues, not with restrictions, travel restrictions and, you know, what's going on in their lives and all the, you know, other logistics associated with it. It seems to me that it seems a little bit rushed, almost to piggyback off the popularity of the previous one, kind of to keep it fresh in people's minds and relevant. But if this is, you know, like if this is another gem, will we have another one in November, another one after that in December? Like how frequent are we going to have these? Is it going to lose its appeal, you know?
It's really interesting because we know that there's going to be a Gwent Open in November and finally the Challenger will be occurring in December. So I would imagine that this may be the last one of the year, but I don't know for sure. Gray Boxer, what do you think about the frequency of these events?
Well, I think the frequency isn't a problem. We like to see more and more Gwent tournaments happening, especially for, you know, you as a caster and myself as a viewer, because I'm not sailing to Austria anytime soon for a tournament, unfortunately, even if I did qualify. And I think that the frequency isn't the problem so much, McBeard, as it's good for us, but it's I think it's worse for the competitors, specifically anyone who qualifies and then has to hurry up and get a plane ticket. A, what quality of plane ticket are you going to get on such short notice? And two, I mean, how can you even afford it, especially since the plane tickets tend to get a lot more expensive the closer to the date you fly out? So I think that, you know, the other option is what, to fly standby like you have before, McBeard. And that can be a very rigorous and sort of, you know, heartbreaking process to stand around in airports waiting for a flight.
Yeah. And not a lot of people have that option as well flying standby requires certain, you have to even have the option to like be able to do that. And I won't be doing that again anytime soon, as Flake can actually attest that it's sometimes not very fun to fly standby. But one thing I will say is that we are definitely coming at this right now, talking about this from a North American point of view. A lot of the issues that Flake outlined as far as that would be like logistically difficult things really don't apply as much if you live in Europe. Airfare in Europe is actually fairly affordable to fly around. I know you can go from like we were actually looking this up. You can fly from Italy to Warsaw from like Rome to Warsaw for like $30. It's really a stark difference. Like traveling domestically in Canada is like so expensive. It's really funny to see how cheap airfare is, and there's like not just one but at least like three off the top of my head discount airlines that I can think of that you could easily make it. So just to wrap that up right there, of course you can sail. Yes, of course you can sail there. In the chat I see that
cheaper, McBeard. It's about $30
what to sail there. Oh, to fly to fly from Rome to Warsaw, just in my example. Yeah, but how much is it to sail there? That's the real question. It's the only way to really travel to Europe. You haven't really traveled unless you're in the barge of a ship.
You never get there in time.
I guess I'd have to leave today. All right. So those are, you know, that's like, there's a lot of really, there's really important competitive stuff, although that's not a lot of big news. And we are recording this on Monday. It's a long weekend here in Canada. No news came out of Gwent, to my knowledge, today. Some more may come out this week, but you know, we're doing this live on Monday, and I guess it's time to probably talk about the faction of choice today, and that will be Nilfgaard. So let's take a quick break and talk about the newest cards in Nilfgaard and the meta as Nilfgaard stands arguably at the top right now, right after this.
Maybe not today and not tomorrow, but someday someone will find a way to take you down.
So the Gwentleman just released a meta snapshot where Emir Spies was shown to be tier one in the opinions of many players. Grey Boxer, did you get a chance to read the meta snapshot, and how did you feel about Nilfgaard's placement, or generally where things were placed, but Emir being where he is, what do you think about that?
Well, I think Emir started as a meme, right? Because after Gwent Slam, people were wary of Mill. If they saw Emir as a leader, they expected Mill. And that occasionally in the early days could buy you an instant forfeit after they'd realized that you know they're playing against a Mill player. They don't have the next 45 minutes free. They only want to play one game. They've got to go walk the dog. They've got to get somewhere else. They want to do anything but play Mill. And so they'd see your Emir and they'd quit, right? At least. Well, it started coming out, and Mogwai has worked on a deck, and a couple of others had worked on a deck specifically in the Gwentleman to try and pick up an Atraw, I believe, had made some Nilfgaard Spies decks featuring Emir, and they have become more and more refined, and it turns out that Emir is the best leader for Spies, not John Calvet, who previously had been the leader of the Spies deck. So I kind of just shows you the strength of Nilfgaard, because it does have a really good finisher. It has a lot of tools to go into a very deep, very strong round one, and their finisher is one or two cards that are very, very powerful. So it features a couple of flexible gold slots, but specifically, you know, there's so much you can do with the Nilfgaard Spies deck right now that they're saying it's very powerful against all other decks. And I think it requires a little bit more brain power to pilot than some other decks, and that's pretty much the only factor once you find the deck list over there on the Gwentleman website.
And now you can actually bamboozle people by running Mill, because they'll think it's Emir Spies, because it's clearly shown to be very strong, especially now it's been given the spotlight and on the Gwentleman meta snapshot as they release them from time to time. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Emir in a bit, but since this is the faction tour, we are now making our stop at Nilfgaard Station. So we're going to talk about the new cards that were introduced. I say new, as they are less and less new with each of these passing episodes, but we haven't really talked about these cards. So we're going to go once again in alphabetical order, and each of the commandos has a card. In Spetsnazi's case, actually has two cards, because there are five new cards and only four of you guys. So let's talk about the Alba Armored Cavalry. So First of all, I'm going to maybe get that up on the screen so we can for sure take a look at it. But Spetsnazi, what do you think about the Alba Armored Cavalry?
For the people who aren't watching the live stream, the Alba Armored Cavalry, you look at your opponent's top three cards, you pick one, and then you get a chance to look at it. You don't get to see the other ones, and you boost your Armored Cavalry by that card's base power. I think it's... I tend to run a soldier archetype Nilfgaard deck whenever I'm not laddering. I'm just kind of taking it easy because I think it's fun. You have the potential for some really strong buffs because a lot of the other factions and Nilfgaard themselves have just base level strong units. And if you find them, you can drop these things at, you know, plus 10, plus 12 very consistently. It gives you a lot of insight into, well, the kind of deck your opponent is playing. Like, if you are fighting Scoia'tael and you see the Farseer, you know that that is a hand buff Scoia'tael deck. And I like the semi-reveal that that offers you without having to play reveal Nilfgaard.
Anything to add on that, Grey Boxer?
No, except that this card can be kind of troublesome, right? Because some decks that you do run into have very low base strength units, like Skelga, especially in an early round, you might hit a 4 or a 5 or a 1 or something even. And that can be troublesome. But I wanted to ask, just want to jump in and ask our resident Gaunter fan. I wanted to say, what do you think of using the Alba Armored Cavalry with Gaunter?
I have actually not done that. Gaunter Odim has not been in... my deck. I haven't found a place for it, and I think my recent run with him has led to me getting the wrong answer more often than I'd like, and I got a little salty. Doesn't mean I don't love the card, I just hate losing with it. As far as that, it would... Oh gosh, I don't even know. I haven't played with that card. I'm trying to look up what that... or I'm trying to get a feel in my head of what that might be.
Yeah, it's fine. Not a lot of people have been playing with that card. So I think that it's totally fine to kind of search for reasons. I mean, the cool thing about the Alba gives you the information for Gaunter so you can make a more educated guess, but it doesn't necessarily assure anything. So, but that's a cool combo out there right now. And as a soldier, there are some archetypes that can make use of it. I think it's like if it hits a 7, you're fairly happy. You've got 11-point bronze and information. I feel like that's kind of like the average 7 or 8 that you might see as far as base power is concerned. So I think that the card is on paper, it seems like cool. Like, and they just buffed it to 4. I think it's fine. I think the effect is powerful. I think that the card is going to be just, it is what it is. I don't think they need to change it. I think that's just, hey, my dog's on the podcast too, guys. And I think that that's just probably where the card's gonna land. I'm gonna pass this off to somebody else as my dog keeps barking. Live podcast right now, folks. DG Thunder, tell us about how you feel about the Assassin, a disloyal card, 1 strength, deploy on your opponent's side of the board, damage the unit to the left by its base power, but by no more than 10. DG, what do you think about the Assassin?
I like the Assassin as a card, as a concept to be in the game. But I think that it struggles a little bit right now to find a spot in Nilfgaard decks. It's definitely a really strong option off of Kaelok as that emergency removal if you need it. Yeah, it is nice that it's a spy because it can like have those spy synergies. Like in that sense, it's better than just a Thunder to kill the 7-strength Ockvist or something. But it still can be a little rough to play it because sometimes you don't find that target. Sometimes it has armor, sometimes it's boosted. It can be hard to get value off of it.
Yeah, it's really like a unique sort of removal option for Nilfgaard. It has spy synergy. It obviously buffs your Emperor Brigades. It triggers your Enforcers, and it can remove, but not always. Not as reliably as just a zap might do it. And it's also, but it's one of the more popular new cards because it does, you made a really good point, DG Thunder, coming off of Kaelok is like the big thing right now. Like this is huge for what they turned Kaelok into. Kaelok now being able to produce an Assassin or an Emissary or an Ambassador. That extra, like it's not like it was added flexibility. Kaelok was completely reworked when they added the Assassin, but man, did they make Kaelok good just by the Assassin existing. Grey Boxer, do you agree, disagree? Any other thoughts on the Assassin?
No, they're a great targeted removal, but they have the downside of not working against a boosted target to destroy something. They still do the damage. Obviously, they don't work against a an armored unit as well. So they do have some weaknesses in the units that have armor on deploy, or the very rarely, you know, thunderbolted versions of those. That what I meant to say?
Is it?
It's the Blizzard Potion. I want to just say this about Kalok, right? Because you made a really great point that being part of Kalok's suite makes this card really good. This card is bad otherwise, right? It doesn't work in really any decks because it doesn't provide any utility other than hard removal and a slight amount of spy synergy. But what he does is he gives a ton of reach to Kalok, and as one of his options, he can be really great, especially if you've got a couple of enforcers on the board or a couple of brigades. So he can be like a 10 or 15 point play sometimes, depending on what you hit and depending on how much spy synergy you have in that turn.
I think I like where they what they were able to do with Kalok with the introduction of Assassin, because there's not a lot of decks. There was a deck that was really popular. I think it was a Kalvet deck that ran one Assassin, maybe, because I definitely had some people forfeit when they had dead Assassins in round three. But I think that the thing that is like, okay, so I'm gonna give you a Hearthstone reference. Hearthstone has bad cards in their game because a lot of their because they have like a mana curve, and the way you play cards, it's okay to have bad cards in the same kind of tier as good cards. And because they have so many cards that pull random things out of your deck, sometimes you get a good card from that like level, and sometimes you get a bad one and you don't really know. And adding bad cards to the pool of cards is part of how Hearthstone is designed. But it also lets bad cards see more play. Now, I'm not necessarily calling an Assassin a bad card. It's you don't really see a lot of them in decks, but you do see them come out of Kalok from time to time. And I think that it's great that Gwent has found a way to get cards into the game that play other cards that aren't necessarily seen in the deck builder as much as they're kind of seen behind the curtain or behind the scenes of other cards, either by pulling it out of your deck or just spawning it out of thin air. And it's a great way of doing it. It's a great way. It's Gwent's way of doing it. And like the way organic cards are pulled out from the herbalist, and you know, the way Kalok spawns assassins and stuff like that, the way a lot of the mages work, a lot of great examples of it. So I just think that it's great. I think that I like the assassin in the game. I think that it's quite powerful when used to get rid of those proactive setup cards that are such a pain sometimes, Emperor Enforcers and such. But it is fairly niche, but it's not as niche as the next card I wanted to talk about, and that's Magni Division. So Magni Division, 7 strength unit, agile, as many cards are. This one is a mouthful. It's got a paragraph to talk about here. So this is Magni Division. This is Mills. This is not always Mill, but mostly at home in Mill. So if neither player has passed, draw the top card from your deck. Okay, so you draw the card, and then create a base copy of the top bronze card in your opponent's deck that they then draw. So you draw the card, your opponent gets a card that is not drawn but instead created. So it can constantly duplicate the top card on your opponent's deck, but you, of course, draw the card that's on the top of your deck. So it's actually a fairly complicated card. In practice, you can get used to it, but the thrilling... And you can also expand on your general feelings about Mill and this card, but how do you feel about this card? Now that you've seen it in a tournament landscape, you may have even played Mill yourself. How do you feel about Magni Division?
This might have been mine, McBee, earlier on. We might have been discussing that. I think Magni Division was...
Oh, my bad. Oh. I'm back.
Oh, that's right, because I actually I didn't go in.
But it actually was Flake's card, I think. I was like, I really hate Mill, so pass. Okay,
because it was alphabetical order, and I didn't go in order. So you know what, Flake, tell us about Magni Division, and then we'll go back to Infiltrator, which is Thrilling Spirit. Thanks, guys.
All right, well, these things happen. Live TV, live radio, it's all good. I just want to first vent a little bit. I was looking at the meta snapshot and seeing Emir at the top and Cambi at the bottom, and nowhere in between that top and bottom was any Death Wish. I protest. That list is under protest. We'll get back to that. Anyways, that said, the Magni Division... if Mill is considered like a plague on Gwent, then this card is the rat that carries the disease, I guess you can call it. Whereas Avalok might be patient zero, but this card is pretty much signals the end. I don't think this card needs a rework. The first time I read it, I had to bust out a thesaurus and my Rosetta Stone to just kind of decipher what the hell it means. But once you see it in action, I don't think it needs a rework necessarily. as it really is limited to the mill archetype, which is getting plenty of shade thrown at it, so I don't think it's going to get much love going forward. But I personally have no issue with mill as an archetype itself. I mean, it's weak against certain matchups and strong against others, but that's pretty much every other deck there is, really. I just think that it earned a bad reputation because it heavily punishes decks that efficiently thin themselves out, which pretty much is all the rage and a big strategy with things like Scoia'tael and things like most decks look to do that as it is. So I think that that's why it might just be, you know, the scum of the earth at the moment.
I mean, I do like Magna Division in situations where you can proc the Guardian's Death Wish, putting the Bronze Golems on top of your opponent's deck. But outside of that specific interaction, it's pretty much where you can take advantage of the mill. And yeah, I love that. Patient Zero, Avalok. Great. Okay, the thrilling. We can actually talk to you about the card that you were lined up to discuss right now. So we're going to be talking about Infiltrator, which I think needs no introduction. Easily the most popular new Nilfgaard card revealed, no pun intended. And I think that the Infiltrator, which is a 9-strength agile unit that toggles another unit's spying token, which is the red eyeball above the card that signifies it is disloyal. It does trigger anything that reacts off of disloyal cards, such as Emperor Brigade and Emperor Enforcers. And, you know, it sets up Menno as well. So the thrilling, how do you feel about Infiltrator now that you've seen it a lot, probably?
It's honestly a pretty scary card when it comes on the board, because depending on what it hits, it kind of makes you wonder about what your opponent is going to do. If he hits a high strength card, you're like, oh, does he have Menno? This could really mess me up. Or he can ping it off of the Enforcers, as you said. So it's pretty versatile, but it's also pretty scary because it works so... it has a great versatility. And kind of just... It's basically like impending doom on the board. You're like, oh my God, what is he doing?
Yeah, the flavor of the Infiltrator has always been one of my favorites. Like, I can't trust any of these guys. They're on my board now and they're...
Yeah, exactly.
They're clearly swayed. They've been turned... Gray Boxer, do you think this card's a little bit too good at 9 strength?
I think that it's way too good at 9 strength for a number of reasons. Because if it's very obvious synergy with Menno is just the easiest, it's literally a targeted offensive Vilgefortz. So yeah, without letting them draw a card. So it's very overpowered for that reason, even without a 9 body. But I like the effect, right? The effect enables Enforcers, it enables Brigades, and it allows you to more or less fully fledge out your Spies archetype, which is why I think Spies is so good right now in the meta. I think specifically, though, its easy combination with cards like Nazca Brigade make both cards achieve way higher than the sort of mean strength you'd accept from a Bronze, right? When the most recent patch came out, you know, or sorry, when the right, we had all had huge problems with Francesca, right? Because Francesca is producing Bronzes at 14, 16 strength, way overpowered, right? So they took that down. They don't want Bronzes to be 14 or 16 strength. Well, it's quite easy to see that one of these cards can hit 14 or 15 strength by toggling the spy effect, as well as enabling a Nazca to hit for 14 damage by being or sorry, 12 damage by being a 5 strength body with the 7 damage. Oh, and then it buffs itself by 4/2. So it is actually 16. There's so many ways to absolutely break around with a couple of Bronze cards. And with this card sort of enabling it, I think it is really strong. And I think 9 is probably too much.
It's really interesting. I was just thinking about this as you were talking. Like if this card was anything less, like I think 9 is pretty high, I gotta say. But I think that like the Enforcers are set up cards, the Brigades are set up cards, the Infiltrator helps set up those cards, like actually help them gain value, and of course the Nazca as well. Like they all work together, and I think that maybe this card was put at 9 because they didn't, maybe Gwent didn't want there to be too many low strength setup cards, and this was kind of, you need to play it after you have your setup on the board. But I don't know, I was just thinking like maybe 9's a little high for this guy because of what he can actually do. And I just want to shout out to the chat. You guys are all referencing a very popular meme right now from Reddit where it's like the Infiltrator goes up to next to Menno and says, "Hey Menno, that guy right there, he's spying." And Menno's like, "I got this." Like it just says like, "That guy's a spy right there. Look, go get him, Menno." It's good stuff. So yeah, I think 9 is, I mean, I wonder, we're going to see tempered changes in the last balancing patch, but I think maybe once We get to the end of the month and the end of the competitive season. Maybe there might be more sweeping changes. I kind of hope it's only tweaks, but more tweaks, perhaps. So we talked to Flake about Magni Division. That only leaves one last card, and that is the Nilfgaardian Standard Bearer. 7-strength agile card. Whenever you play a soldier from your hand, boost an ally by 2, and you can choose where the boost goes. Also, when you deploy the card, boost an ally by 2. Spetsnazi, we're coming back around to you. How do you feel about the Nilfgaardian Standard Bearer?
I really like this card. It was almost an auto include when I saw the new soldier tags on Nilfgaard. Seeing as like I think it's 14 bronze cards in total from Nilfgaard are now soldiers. I find that it could be a really big problem for the person like I'm playing against, because even one on the battlefield means that like it can quickly get out of hand. What with deploy abilities from other cards like the Arbalester, because you're already taking, you know, you're already doing damage to them, and then you just kind of add this, you know, hey, also I get to buff at the end of my turn, thank you, kind of thing. With that, it's possible to like block Scorches by just 2 points. If you can buff every unit at least once, you make Eskel a pretty dead card because he just can't hit anything. Weather kind of gets countered too if you can pick the one card that the weather will always hit and always make sure to just buff that one card. I think it's great, and if you can get more than one of these standard bearers on the field, it spirals so out of hand for the other guy. I've had well over 100 points at the end of a match just because, you know, my opponent didn't have a removal for the standard bearer, and I had all three, and it was just every single turn I was getting such ridiculous amounts of points on the board.
Yeah, it's just another great setup card that Nilfgaard has. We just talked about all of those cards, and you know, it's not a far cry away from like cards like Farseer and other cards that are like really scary when there's more than one on the board, really hard to like take around if you can't answer this card. And I think that it's taking a kind of a back seat to the Enforcer, because the Enforcer is also control, but this card is like very fair. Like, I think that it first of all, it feels really good to be able to choose the buff, and it's kind of like a foil to the Enforcer. Like, it's a little bit more. It's all happening on your side of the board. Like, you're forcing your opponent to have an answer instead of you having the kind of the answer in the Enforcer itself. So it's more about what you play rather than what your opponent plays. Gray Boxer, do you have any thoughts about the Nilfgaardian Standard Bearer that haven't been covered?
No, I think that they're sort of like the reverse side of you know, like a number of cards that just gain value as you play a certain archetype. They're kind of cookie cutter to me, McBeard. This card's kind of boring. And I like that, you know, Spets was right. You can sort of protect your cards from a card like Eskel, but he's sort of a fringe flex gold right now. So like, even though that is beneficial, I don't think it's really like a huge important thing to make sure that you're doing on your side. So I'm sure that, you know, we might see a change to this card in the future based on play rates or maybe if they buff up the soldier type deck a little bit more, we might see this card more. But I almost never see it, McBeard. And when I do, it's not that threatening, but it does gain a lot of strength, and it starts at a 7.
Yeah, it starts as a 7 if it's played on an empty board, and a 9 if it isn't. And I think it's like, the thing about, I'll tell you one thing, Eskel has been not great for me. I've run Eskel on a couple of decks, and he feels a little bit like Igni in that, like, finding that perfect moment to use him, like, it gets harder and harder, I think. Like, if you don't have him in hand when you need him and you draw him later, like, first of all, he's useless against full test. And, like, just there's so many cards that come out boosted or boost as well. Like, this really only, like, killing that Enforcer at the beginning of the round, like, opportunity, I think, when you're playing something like Eskel. But that, I guess that's a totally other topic. But let's talk about the leaders now. Let's talk about kind of the state of Nilfgaard in the meta. And Gray Boxer, I think I want to talk to you about it first, because you did read the meta snapshot by the Gwendolyn, and you know that a lot of opinions from pro players go into this kind of stuff. And you know, it's all very sourced. It's not just really the Gwendolyn. It's a lot of people that kind of put their votes in. How do you feel about Nilfgaard in general? Do you feel like that they're where they need to be? Do you think they're a little on the strong side? I don't think you're going to argue that they're on the weak side.
No, for once, they're pretty strong. I mean, we haven't seen them at this sort of power level since the beginning of the open beta, right? Mm-hmm. And and they were only strong because they were able to steal units from extremely overpowered Skellige graveyards, right? So finally, I think we're seeing the maturation and the finalization of a long-developed archetype since January of Nilfgaard, that is the Spies archetype. And this is something that you and I tested way back in January, and we saw Imperial Brigades, and they used to buff for every single Spy that was on the board, period, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've sort of seen them go through various changes, and they're sort of part of your main engine, right? The Spies decks right now are going to have, you know, they're going to have Emir as a leader. They're going to focus on a Spy engine, which is going to involve, obviously, all of your Impera Brigades, your Impera Enforcers, your Emissaries, and you're just going to get that chain going. And you can use a couple of... use a couple of Vikovara medics to res your emissaries and just gain additional thinning, and specifically gain additional synergy with your, you know, value gaining cards on the board like Enforcers and Brigades. So there's little to no downside to playing a deep round one because your finisher is literally one card. It's hard to figure out like when this deck is really bad. And it's usually pretty solid. It just takes a lot of, I think you can't just barf all of your Spies onto the board. You have to sort of think about sequencing and think about when you're going to play a Seer and what you want to put back into your deck. Generally, that's pretty easy, right? It's going to end up being Nazca that hopefully was buffed, mm-hmm. and Roach for your final play, Rainfarn. So, you know, there's a lot of strength to this deck. And not a lot of weaknesses, and that's what you want to see from a tier one deck. And I think that Emir Spies is well suited and well placed at the top, or at least, I mean, within shouting distance.
Absolutely. So, DG Thunder, do you have any comments to make about Emir Spies? Because we're talking about Emir now. We're gonna go through the leaders. Do you have any comments to make about Emir Spies? How you feel about how Emir is doing? Why he maybe ended up better than Calvet in the moment? I'm not gonna say in the end. I'm gonna say currently seems to be in favor. Any thoughts on Emir?
Honestly, I'm a little confused about why Emir is currently listed as better than Calvet. I always thought that Calvet would be better, and like people were saying, you know, the one extra medic is a big deal. Never quite got it. I've always loved Emir. Like, way back in the day, Nilfgaard had, like, the strongest tech tools. Like, they're generally weak overall power cards, but, like, the highest amount of utility, like Ox with the double lock, even if he's only 5 strength. Peter also. And I love the idea of being able to reuse those. But the Spy Nilfgaard deck isn't doing that necessarily. Like, it has that as an emergency fallback. If they can replay Peter, they can replay... I don't think they even play Ox.
Somebody.
But most of the time it's just for that one extra medic, which I understand that it's really strong, but having not played it, I'm a little confused why it's like so better than Calvet.
I mean, it's interesting. I think that like running Emir over Calvet. Sorry, it's Calvet. I think.
I think gotta say it like Americans and North Americans and so on.
So I think that one of the things is like Calvet might run K here, Emir may not, and at least not in like obviously in Mill you would, but in Spies that gold slide is kind of freed up because you're able to kind of get through your deck by replaying stuff like Kaelok into an Emissary, and I think that the extra strength might come from like it's the one, yeah, there is the one Vikovara medic that you see in a lot of lists. Replaying of like weather clear, like something like Vanimar being able to clear up gold weathers is very strong as well. Being able to replay Kaelok is very strong. Being able to replay Peter in specific matchups like Spell Squirtle is very strong. And I think that that's kind of the more I say it, the more I'm realizing that Emir has this extra flexibility by being kind of a walking decoy, a 7 strength decoy. And that's not necessarily a decoy, but also like has a lot of other ways that you can play it. Whereas Calvet is just, I'm going to get another good card out of my deck, +4. And then Kaher is going to do that for me as well. Although I think Kaher was seeing cuts in Calvet as well. Like, so I'm not necessarily saying that that's like the one thing, but I think it's just generally the flexibility. The buff to 7 definitely didn't hurt him at all either. And now that we've actually seen some exploration of different archetypes and different leaders, it's kind of, I think it's just, yeah, it's that flexibility of being able to replay stuff like Kaelok, Peter, Ox in some situations, the Vikovara medic, and of course, like taking stuff back up off the board. In general, isn't that much, it doesn't hurt you that much because Emir is 7 as well.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's the same reason that, like, the Mages and Kaelok and any other choice card is really strong right now. Mm-hmm. It's because the flexibility allows you to adapt for any matchup in any situation.
So that is literally what we want to see in a top meta deck right now.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of a deck that is maybe not considered a top meta deck, but I played it a little bit on stream. I definitely felt like it was really my lack of experience. It's very rigid. It's very tough to play. I'm talking about Morvran Voorhees and Reveal. Generally, he is kind of leading off Reveal. Not required, but you know, it's pretty weird to not run Morvran in a Reveal deck. But, you know, he runs staple gold such as Vatyr. He runs, he probably gets a lot of use out of Golems as well. Mangonels come and go. Of course, Blackfire Scorpions. Or, sorry, the Black... did I get that right? Blackfire Scorpions? I feel like I just maybe don't know the name of that card. But the one that you reveal, and of course it does damage when you reveal. They also got a buff in the last couple patches. They're quite good now. Alchemists, etc. Morvran Reveal has been a... It has seen middle level of power at the beginning of closed beta. It was flagged early on as a very, very powerful deck, and it's since declined in popularity. Spotters have changed over time. But Morvran Reveal is still it's still out there, not very well represented. The thrilling, how do you feel about Reveal Nilfgaard, getting that information about what's in your opponent's hand and kind of manipulating what they're able to do?
You know, Reveal Nilfgaard, Morvran, is actually the one leader that I have never played in Gwent. Except for today. I did a match with him today. He's really cool, definitely very... The thing I find, though, he's not very versatile. So, like, if I'm going into a ranked match and then the leader pops up and I see Morvran, I'm immediately like, okay, Reveal. So I can just start, like, I play Francesca Mulligan, so I can just start teching my deck and pick the cards based on how to react to that. So I think that kind of aspect might have made him disappear a little bit. But I really like the new Reveal stuff that they have going on with the Golems and kind of how to thin your deck with Reveal. But I think he's just very, as you said, rigid right now. There's not much else you can do with him.
Mm-hmm. Greybox, have you played any Reveal, like, ever or recently?
Reveal at the start of the, sort of like the start slash middle of the open beta patch and last season a little bit. It's changed a lot, right? It's sort of like... Now you can sort of create your own path. You can choose your own destiny with your spotters. You can reveal a chosen unit, and you know, you can go ahead and buff your spotters by that. But that lines them up for Scorch. It lines them up for Igni, and they're vulnerable to resets. So that sort of thing is a problem. I think really for me, McBeard, even though Morvran was buffed basically by the changes to Golems and Cynthia being pretty amazing now, working with Golems and being good tempo. I mean, Mangonels aren't that great. They're removable. They're sevens. They can be assassinated. The engines, like the Fire Scorpions and so forth, they all sort of, they're more, reliant on just being able to reveal your opponent's cards. That's a little bit harder to do sometimes than just placing a spy on the opposing board. And it makes the engine, McBeard, a little bit harder to get going than a spy's deck, which is sort of the weakness right now of Reveal. And so, couple that with the fact that your spotters no longer work the way they used to. You can't use them to build up strength for a late round. You don't really have a lot going for you. You can use some alchemists to thin your deck, I guess, but ideally you want to be, you know, trying to get as much reveal out as you can and just pinging with your mangonels. Fire Scorpions, as you mentioned, were buffed. They're great. 6 power, deals 4 damage, and it deals 2 damage when it's revealed. So it's really great, but it does 4 damage, I think, when it's revealed. So it's upwards of 14 power. There's a lot of ways that these cards are good, but the problem is that the engine itself is weak. So a deep round isn't necessarily great for reveal, nor does it really allow the deck to have multiplicative power, which is what you see right now in Spies.
Yeah, I think that, overshadowed by the spy decks and like a lot of the stuff that's going on with spies. And I think that shout out in the chat saying that Reveal is the most cerebral. I'm just scrolling up now and I'm trying to find it. Yeah, it's one of the most cerebral builds, because based on what you know your opponent has in hand and what your opponent has in deck, is important. And being able to play around those things and also like capitalize on those things, stuff like Cynthia, being able to make your spotters as good as they can possibly be based on your opponent's hand. Cards like Sweers that are able to, you know, screw your opponent's strategy up completely. And I think Sweers is at a, I think that his play rates have to be like decent. You don't see him in a lot of games, but he's definitely useful. And I believe that, I'm not sure if the meta has come and gone where Sweers has been really good, but with stuff like Spell Scoia'tael with Protectors and Farseers, like Sweers has to be decent, right? Sweers has to be okay. I think I need to do some experimenting with that card. Sweers, of course, forcing your opponent to discard from deck anything revealed on the board or in hand. Like one Farseer on the board, discard all the rest of them to the graveyard if possible. Well,
So just to kind of piggyback on what I said about the engine not really working for reveal, McBeard, the problem with reveal is that to make the engine work, you have to tech everything into your deck to synergize with reveal. But you just mentioned how good reveal is if you can see what your opponent has and then respond to it. Mm-hmm. Reveal has all synergistic teched cards. It doesn't have cards teched to deal with an opponent's win conditions. And a deal, you know, you rarely ever see anything in a reveal deck that's going to interact very much with its opponent.
Yeah.
So the problem is you find out that you're just going to lose. You don't have the tools to deal with the cards that you reveal because you're too busy revealing to try to get a couple extra points on the board now.
Yeah. Shout out to David Rodriguez Jr. He did say earlier that they can forfeit earlier when you know that you've lost the game. So, I mean, it's and also shout out to Rindosi saying that Sweers is a bad top deck, which he is. He is bad late in the game. So you can do, you know, you can get some stuff done very specifically and very uniquely with Sweers and through reveal. But ultimately, I think, you know, I'm not convinced saying that the archetype needs love in that it needs to be changed or optimized. Like, I think it's doing what it's doing. I just think that maybe, I think there needs to be like some sort of hybrid variant that's going to make it work a little bit better. And maybe that just needs to be worked on, kind of like how Herald is still being explored and stuff like that. Maybe Unseen Elder. I don't know. Would you say that Unseen Elder is, where would you rank Unseen Elder and Morvran, Gray Boxer? Just a quick off the top of your head. Who's better in your opinion?
Yeah. So I think that Morvran lacks a lot of ability to respond to an opponent. It also has an engine that's difficult to get going. It doesn't have any carryover. It's rough. You know, we had this talk, you know, last week on the Monsters podcast, and you guys thought that maybe Unseen was the worst leader, and I don't think that's true. I think he's probably third worst. I think that both Herald and Morvran are worse.
I still think I put Herald higher, but I wonder about Morvran and Unseen Elder. I think Morvran definitely has, like, on paper, like, you can at least you get the 20 point start with the three golems and the foot soldier. You can at least get that much.
We get though.
Anyway, let's move on to Calvet. So Calvet has seen a real rise and fall. Calvet is just, you know, he's been one of my favorite leaders kind of always ever since he got the ability that he has now, like basically that kind of ability, the ability of being able to look at the top four cards at this current time. Top four cards of your deck, and I apologize, look at the top three cards in your deck and then play one of those cards. So Flake, I mean, we're talking about Calvet going, he spiked in popularity, he was the king of the spies, and now Emir has kind of swooped in and said, hey, I think I can do this a little bit better, a little bit differently. How do you feel about John Calvet now, and do you think that he's just going to be underplayed now that Emir Spies has shown to be a top-tier deck, or do you think that there's maybe other applications for Calvet? General ideas on Calvet.
I think that Calvet will always have a place in gameplay, mainly because he's such a versatile leader. I mean, though he's seen a lot of tweaking, you know, both to himself and to support cards like Imperial Golem, he's stayed tried and true as a go-to leader for many because of that versatility. I think that he's seen a rise and a fall because of the fact that people who get introduced to Nilfgaard will always go to him because he's a very straightforward type of leader. I mean, where he doesn't necessarily have the skill level required that Emir might have to pilot successfully, nor is he locked to a particular archetype like Morvran is. I don't think that this card, barring a drastic change, which I don't foresee would ever happen, will ever see its popularity dip to the levels, like you said, like Harold or Unseen Elder, Unseen Elder may dip to, But I mean, I've even seen reveal decks that have been played with Kalvate. So it just goes to show to what you were speaking about before about who are the worst leaders. Kalvate can have a successful go with reveal just as much as Morvan could to a degree. It depends on how you're playing it. But for those who are just getting introduced to Nilfgaard, for instance, myself, I don't have many games played with Nilfgaard. By leaps and bounds, it's my least played faction. But when I do play, I know that to get comfortable with the cards and get comfortable with the faction, Kalvate is always the very simplistic and straightforward. So I think as people get more comfortable with the faction, they'll naturally sort of progress to Emir because it is a little bit better down the line and has more synergistic interactions. But it'll never go away because it's more of an average type leader with very broad applications.
I agree. I think that a card that does what Kalvate does should always be a consideration because it's not really, it doesn't really matter what's in your deck. If it's cards that you want to play, Kalvate's going to get those cards for you. And also, I think Kahir is probably, I mean, outside of Mill, where his use is very surgical, I think that Kahir is probably always going to be best in the John Kalvate deck and being able to get that ability twice. I generally like cards and abilities that pull cards out of my deck, like almost exclusively. So I feel like Kalvate will always be the leader that I gravitate towards. Just wanted to quickly check in. Spetsnazi, are you back? Have you been able to reload Discord? Or are you still on the outs? The silence tells me everything. Okay, we'll move on. Well, that was actually the end of the discussion on Nilfgaard. We talked about all three leaders and the new cards. Welcome anybody in the chat right now to throw some questions at us. Greybox or I, or Spetsnazi, DG Thunder, The Thrilling, or Flake joining us in the Commanders Commando Roundtable. Feel free to ask us something as we just take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this. All right, so the community section is very, very live today. Since we are talking to the community, we have four commandos in the channel, and we have the chat bumping right now. And I'm just going to lead off with a great question right now. The Thrilling wants to know what glasses Gray Boxer wears to get that tan.
So I do go outside, that spoiler alert. And going outside means I wear sunglasses because I don't like the bright sun shining in my eyes. And so usually, especially on a day like Monday or Tuesday, I've been outside all day on Sunday because I play football. And so some people in Europe like to call it hand egg, but I play football in an intramural league, and we don't wear helmets. But I do wear a pretty sick headband and sunglasses all day. So I pretty much don't at all. Just never happens. I did have a really nice pair of sunglasses. Those broke, so now I wear knockarounds, which are amazing.
Hand egg. I've never heard that, and I love it. Because it's like, yeah, it's football, right? European football, soccer. Hand egg. That's right. Take it down a peg.
Like I put up two touchdowns this weekend, McBeard. Caught two touchdowns.
Two hand egg touchdowns? Damn, that's good.
Right in the basket.
Got a great question here from Protagonist. What do we think about treason? Because we didn't discuss it. You did not miss it. We didn't discuss it. Treason, an interesting silver card. So treason, if you are not aware, because you maybe didn't see it lately, is a silver special card that will move a unit from one side of the board to the other. And if the base power, or the current power, sorry, is no higher than 10. So a maximum swing of 20. And Gray Boxer, have you played any decks with treason in it? I'll start with you, but then I'm also, anybody in the channel who has comments about treason, feel free to speak up after Gray Boxer here.
Yeah, share us your stories and mystify us with your tales of excellence with treason, because I've never played it. It's basically a combo with Zarathisius, right? That's more or less your ultimate combination. And
well, it used to be.
They sort of changed it, right? It's and now it's sort of like Becker's Twisted Mirror for spying decks, right? So
yeah, Treason has seen a lot of different kind of permutations.
Power, the current,
yeah,
synergy with spies, kind of like, it's just don't play Treason.
Yeah, I mean, like, it does also need, like, it would be too strong if it was, like, any unit at all. You have to actually trigger the spy, which is the big thing. All card advantage spies are above 10, so it can't really get you Cantarella back necessarily, but if you damage it in some way, I guess you can take it. So it doesn't really have anything to do with base power, so it does have opportunity. I think that it is weakened by the idea that, you know, there are cards that are already doing so much with spies, your Nausicaa Brigade, Mano as well. Will you always have a great target for this? When would you use it? When is it at its strongest? Does it have bamboozle value since no one sees it? I will open the floor to anybody who has played Treason. Anybody wants to speak up?
I mean, if I'm going to put, Treason is a card that I equate very much to BM. And it, in terms of reliability, I've had such ups and downs with BTM. Flake Luck has never always been the most, generous to me, where if there's a one on the board on either side, BTM can always be your worst nightmare. But I feel like Treason with the same kind of power swing of 20 is a little bit more targeted and reliable with the Infiltrator as a fairly common bronze card now that's around. I don't know why the card isn't seeing a little bit more play. I feel like there are other ways to get rid of spies on the other side that might not be as valuable of a card slot as silver would be to Nilfgaard, but I think that you could easily slot it in there and really screw someone up and their game plan down the line, because they might be anticipating a Menno where you're playing that instead, saving the Menno for down the road. I don't think it's going to be something that is going to overtake the meta where you're going to see it very prominently, but like BTM kind of surprises you now and then, this might be something of the same ilk.
It's a great comparison, BTM and Treason. I mean, they do kind of a similar thing in that it's like a big power swapping card, and I think that while I don't see like the best like applications for the card, as Torch said in the chat, Silver Spots and Nilfgaard are really, really tight. There's just so many really good ones. So when you have a faction that has like Ox and Peter and the way you can use Decoy, as Seer is in a lot of decks, of course, Cantarella and Joaquim, Devet, also like huge, huge cards. Roach is in so many Nilfgaard decks, so it's really hard to find like a really good spot for Treason. But I don't think I want them to change this card anymore. I think that the card, as like flavor-wise, a card called Treason, the idea that you are bribing a spy to join your side, like, I think that really works. It's an effect that was in Gwent, left Gwent, and has now come back into Gwent. So I feel like there's a desire from the designers and the developers to have a card like this still in the game. While it's not like a dominating mechanic, it's still something that is in the game. And I do honestly believe it has surprise factor value, personally.
If I may.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that a big part of the problem with Treason right now is that it overlaps significantly with the Nausicaa Brigade. The Nausicaa Brigade being able to hit something up to 7 points now makes there be a very fine line between where Nausicaa Brigade stops being good and Treason starts being good. And just that overlap and the fact that Nausicaa Brigade is only a bronze slot and that it's far more reliable than Treason, because Treason might sometimes only get you like, you know, 6-8 points. Mm-hmm. I think really hurts it a lot. And like you said, with silver slots being so tight.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow up on the person who asked the question, poor Otagonist does say he enjoys using it. I imagine like it has a lot of great applications with Infiltrator, since you can toggle that spying unit and basically can take whatever you want. And he says that it has a really great application when stealing Ekamara and other resilient units that are everywhere, since Dora Gray is everywhere. So Ekamara is everywhere as well. And just grabbing that resilient unit is probably the best way to get value from it, because you don't just get the value from the swing of the betrayal, but also in the follow-up round. So maybe there's something there, but I'll move on to the next question in the chat that we're going to grab here. Mythic Pilot has asked us if we've ran any Frostless Aridin, which abuses woodland without any other weather. Mythic Pilot, I'd like you to expand on this, but has anybody heard of this Aridin that's not running Wild Hunt Hounds? Gray Boxer, I'll start with you on that one.
Yeah, you just use Aridin instead of Dagon. You put one Bronze Frost in your deck instead of putting a Foglet in your deck, and instead of using Dagon to spawn Fog, you use Aridin to spawn a Wild Hunt Hound, which then spawns Frost, and it ends up being like or something. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's pretty much it. There's not really much difference there. You use basically the same Dagon core of the deck, but you use Aridin as a leader, and you use the Wild Hunt Hound instead.
Yeah, I mean, I've liked using Aridin with like a single Frost, and you spawn the Hound, or you run the Frost, of course, with the Navigator. But Aridin is seeing so many other ways to be played right now, and the idea of playing it without Frost is interesting. It definitely will throw people off. It's kind of like how whenever you run any specific leader, it affects your opponent's mulligans, it affects your opponent's approach, and then you just surprise them, like, hey, I'm not actually playing any of these cards. So there's always that. Protagonist has a follow-up about Nausicaa Brigade. How do we feel about strengthening rather than boosting in that situation? I think that, I don't know, I feel like strengthening is by a large part a Skellige thing, and it also opens up a lot of interesting applications with a seer putting it back in the deck and it triggering a second time. I feel like it was a lot more abused in the past, though. I feel like people putting that one Nausicaa back in the deck in a thinner spy deck back maybe at the beginning of open beta when Calvet was the king, and you'd be able to put that last Nausicaa Brigade and Roach back in the deck, play K here, get Roach, get that Nausicaa Brigade, and maybe Axe Joaquim or something like that. But I feel like it's not as much of an issue anymore. I don't know, Greybox, have you thought about that?
That's sort of what I tried saying at the top, saying what the spy finisher is using using a seer to put Roach back in along with one of your brigades, and then using Rainfarn to get Joaquim out, who then gets out the 9 base strength Nausicaa, which then deals 5 damage and then buffs itself up to 13. And I've seen that a lot, and it's a really good combination, and it's basically your perfect finisher for Nilfgaard spy. So I've seen it a lot. I don't know that I would call it an abuse. If it didn't buff by base strength, then you wouldn't be able to do this. Obviously, I don't think that really 4 base strength is a huge killer for this combination, because you do have to have a lot of things go off your way to be able to do it. But yeah, it's a pretty good combo when it hits.
Yeah, I feel like if it was changed, my apologies. If it was changed to boosting and not strengthening, I honestly just don't believe it would change the play rate of the card. I think that it would obviously affect the power level of the card when it's replayed in those situations, especially if it's like in the mirror. But I feel like people would still play it, because it gets a lot done when you actually play the card. So you'd still get the same amount of value on the round that you play it. It would be susceptible to different things. Right now, it actually can be killed by stuff like Eskel and Assassin. It's just a little bit different, but I don't know if it would actually affect the play rate all that much. Nausicaa Brigade, very good card, especially nowadays with how much damage it does. So I think that I think this has been a pretty solid podcast. Gray Boxer, what do you think?
Yeah, thank you everybody for asking questions, and big thanks to the Commandos for being on this season's Commandos Roundtable. It's been really good to talk Nilfgaard with you guys and gals.
And once again, we are supported by these and other Commandos.
Oops.
Oh, man, Greyboxer, you've been doing this thing all night where the mic is just missing the very beginning of what you're saying, so we didn't get it. So say a word and then say Commandos, just so we can get it.
Word Commandos!
Word Commandos. Thanks, guys. We are supported by our Commandos, our patrons at patreon.com/CommandosHorn. Thanks for supporting our content, keeping the podcast ad-free, and as they say, keeping the lights on. Just a last moment for all of you. Feel free to give a shout-out to anybody you want to give a shout-out to. Promote your channel if you're a streamer, YouTube content creator, or anything you do. Spetsnazzy, let's start with you and go around the table.
Well, seeing as I'm not a streamer, not a content creator, I really don't have anything to plug. And sadly enough, I don't actually have any friends who were at all interested in The Witcher 3 enough or in CCGs past Hearthstone enough to even know what Gwent is. So I guess I'm just going to take my time to say thanks for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I can't wait to hear the podcast when it comes out.
Yeah, man. I mean, being real right now, it's really great to actually have somebody who has that, like, your point of view as a non-content creator and an audience member, somebody who just watches and plays. Like, we, like, in our bubble, we talk to a lot of people that also stream and are very, very opinionated, very, very active. So it's great to have your point of view. It's our pleasure having you. Thanks for coming on, Spitznazzy. DG Thunder, any shout-outs that you have?
Shout-outs? Not hugely so. I do stream at Twitch. I have a single video up on YouTube and aspirations to upload more. But yeah.
Right
you
on.
You can catch me at twitch.tv/DG Thunderer.
Excellent, man. DG Thunderer has written us a lot of really smart emails and is always one of the most analytical commenters in Discord on our strategy and in my chat and Greybox's chat as well, I believe, when you can catch it. And it's really great to finally have you on the show. I feel like you've been on the show sort of here and there, like through emails and stuff like that. So to actually have you on the show, it's been great to have you, DG. The Thrilling, where can people find you when you stream? And if do you have any shout outs that you want to give?
I just want to say thanks so much for having me on the show, McBeard and Greyboxer. It has been an absolute pleasure. Yeah, if you would have asked me like a month ago if I was going to be on Commander's Horn, I'd be like, absolutely not, you're crazy. So thank you so much. It was amazing. You can find me at twitch.tv/thethrilling.
Great to have you. And it's great to do these episodes because, you know, when I put the shout out to people who want to be on the show, like I never know exactly what the response is going to be. And it's great to have you get a lot of points of view from a lot of people that maybe people haven't heard from. So it's our pleasure, of course, to have you, The Thrilling. Finally, the Flake, where can people find you? And do you have any shout outs for the world?
Yes, if anybody wants to check me out, I do stream Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern time. That's at twitch.tv/watchflake. Also, you can find me on the Twitter machine at the same thing, at watchflake. And I want to say thank you to McBee and Greyboxer for having me on the show. It's been fantastic. Great contributions from everybody. You guys rock all the sauces. And as in terms of shout-outs, there's so many I want to give out. Dave Rodriguez Jr., he designed the fantastic overlay and all the amazing emotes and stuff. He's a great guy. And BW for modding my channel as well. And there's just so many of you who come in, and I want to say thank you so much. So, yeah, great show. Thank you very much for having me.
I'll extend the shout out to David Rodriguez Jr. as well. Also designed a lot of my emotes on top of that. Great artist, great supporter, a great commando as well in his own right. And he's been in the chat as well for the entirety of the show. So thanks to David Rodriguez Jr. And thanks to you, Flake, for joining us. And I guess we can wrap it up here. It's been a great community episode. And, I like that we can do this. It's just really means a lot to me. And I'm sure to Greyboxer as well that we can do this, hang out with you guys, because your support really means so much to us. And it's just great to do this, to be on episode 55 and to still be kind of cruising along here. So we'll wrap this up here. Once again, you can find us, Commander's Horn, on Twitter at Commander's Horn. You can email us your questions, comments, discussion topics, etc. at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know whatever is on your mind. Greyboxer, where can people find you?
You can find me on the Twitch at twitch.tv/Greyboxer. You can find me on the Twitter at GreyboxerGwent. And I'm also on YouTube as Greyboxer. I don't have any fancy C/McBoxer or C/Greybeard or anything cool like that. But I do have a few videos up there of Gwent folktales, and I put some stream highlights up there every once in a while. So, generally just follow me on Twitter and I'll tell you when I'm streaming.
You are the Midnight Marauder. You are the late night solution for lots of North Americans looking for some Gwent. And it's always a pleasure to watch you, Greyboxer. I can be found at McBeardCH on Twitter, where I update all of my stuff. I can be found on Twitch. I do stream most weekdays, Monday to Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with variations. Follow me on Twitter for those changes. Finally, I can be found at C/McBeard. On YouTube, where I post videos such as this podcast, as well as other deck guides, gameplay, and other fun stuff that I get up to. Thanks so much, everybody. Thanks to the commanders. Thanks to the chat. Thanks to everybody for joining us today and to everybody listening at home. And it was a great podcast. What do you think, Greyboxer?
I really look forward to these Commando Roundtables, man. It's really excellent to have everybody on the show and to hear how excited everybody is to be on the show and to have this really varied discussion, especially about such a cool faction like Nilfgaard. It's been mega. So thanks everybody for joining us, and well done, McBeard, being the MC.
Thanks. Mediating phone calls is something that I have a lot of experience doing. So that's advertising for you. All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us today. We'll wrap this up here. Gray Boxer.
What?
The outro.
We're supposed to play pretty music and then
I am supposed to play the music because we're live.
Until next time.
Oh yeah, yeah. So let's get the music playing here. Okay. Yes.
Stop talking over me, McBeard. I can't do the outro when you talk over me.
All right.
Next time. This is Gray Boxer.
And this is McBeard. Best of luck on the path. Thanks everybody.
It's not working.